In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And, well, here this week, I think we both had kind of a difficult week. Would you say so, Mike?
It's been a bit, yeah. I don't want to necessarily start with a downer, but...
I'm not saying a downer, but we both
don't
had
necessarily
a kind of
have to get
week.
Into it either.
No, we're not necessarily going to get too heavily into it. We both just had some stress and added factors in our week. So what that did cause, however, was it caused the responsibilities of me to not necessarily operate in their proper format. So unlike last week's episode where we got to talk about a bunch of really cool Metallica songs and we had kind of a format of what we were going to discuss.
Right.
We really don't have the same level of format. Although I do have one interesting pop culture thing that I read about today, which is like hurting my brain. But at the same time, I don't know. I'm almost to the point where I don't care. But anyway, so, yeah, I'm just warning y'all in advance listening to this. This may be more of a rambling conversation than a conversation with point. But, hey, who knows? Something might come out of it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, this is more about just kind of let's ride things out and maybe something interesting will pop up. We've had a few things that we've learned about recently. I know I have. Let's see what happens.
So I'll get right to the thing that I had read about.
Mm-hmm.
There's some rumors going around about the Star Wars universe. And of course,
really?
Star Wars rumors are things that I pay attention to. Apparently, and this is apparently from a rumor hound that was able to identify a lot of things that were going to happen in Rise of Skywalker before Rise of Skywalker came out.
Oh, really?
Also knew a lot of things about the other version of the third movie.
Oh, yeah, the one that, the script leaked and the whole story was completely different in many spots.
Yeah.
And I heard it was interesting as hell. I never got my hands on the script, though.
I saw some of it, and it was interesting, but it definitely wouldn't have had the same completion of a trilogy. But
okay.
At the same time, maybe that would have been a good thing. I don't know. So here's the new rumor. The new rumor is that... there's some issues happening at Disney in the Lucasfilm section of Disney.
Right.
Between Kathleen Kennedy, who's kind of been the shepherd of the whole Star Wars thing since it was actually back when it was with Lucasfilm. She was a producer on some early movies with George Lucas. I think she was involved in the Indiana Jones movies. And then she's kind of stewarded the whole Star Wars thing since it's been at Disney and been Disney's product.
Right.
There's been some disagreement and some stuff going on between her and I'm forgetting his name now. Actor. He was in Iron Man has a Happy Hogan.
John Favreau?
Yes, thank you. My brain was just not working at all.
He is I recognize John Favreau and everything he's in. And the fact that you said he was Happy Hogan, and I've watched Iron Man like total of twice, but I see him there and I'm like, oh, it's John. Because John's always, he's always fucking cool.
The next movie I was going to go to.
Isn't he like the,
what?
What? What were you saying?
I was going to go to Swingers as the next movie.
Oh, yeah, definitely John Pratt.
Yeah.
Isn't he like always like the expert and the consultant? Like on most, if he's not directing, he's a consultant of some sort.
Here's the deal.
On sci-fi culture, on comic culture, he's the guy. He's the guru.
Yeah, well, he got in on the ground floor of Marvel because he actually directed the first two Iron Man movies.
Right. I remember that.
And then he went on to do, he's kind of one of the showrunners and has been a director on The Mandalorian.
Okay.
TV series. And he's been involved in some of the various stuff for, he did voice a character and was, I believe, motion capture for a character in, the Solo movie.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. He plays an alien character, but,
nice.
he's heavily involved with Disney and all the things going on with Disney. And he was one of the first ones to also, I wouldn't say one of the first ones, but he was one of the people that took advantage of getting a good contract with Netflix and being able to put out a movie with Netflix and a TV series actually based on the movie that he was in. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Chef that he did.
No.
It's got John Leguizamo in it. Actually has Robert Downey Jr. in a small role, and then Sofia Vergara.
Oh, cool.
It's about a guy who's he's kind of a high also Dustin Hoffman and I can't remember the other guy, but anyway,
makes me want to see it.
He's kind of a high powered chef working at Dustin Hoffman's restaurant, and this food critic comes in. He wants to make him some really good food, but Dustin Hoffman's character's like, no, you're going to stick to the regular menu. Ends up getting blown up, issues, fights, gets fired, then decides he's going to have like a midlife crisis, and he wants to open a food truck. And finds himself in Florida getting this food truck, opening this food truck, and then doing a road trip all the way back to the Los Angeles area, which is where the story starts. And it's also a story about him kind of reconnecting with his kid. And so, great movie. Scarlett Johansson's also in it. A fairly small role.
Damn.
But great kind of small form movie. Almost very similar to a kind of the art house movies of the 90s. But not. It doesn't go into any of the dark or dirty realms of those things.
Okay.
It's a fairly bright and happy movie. It's actually become one of my feel good movies. If I need to feel good about stuff, if I'm feeling depressed or feeling down, I watch the movie because it's kind of a redemption story. But he did that, and in the process of doing that movie, he actually learned how to make all of the things you see him make on screen. So when he's cooking on screen, he is making all of it. Every little bit of it he's doing.
Oh, wow.
He actually worked with a chef who was one of the chefs that kind of started the food truck revolution.
Uh-huh.
Within the last 10 years or so, he started like the big revolution of food trucks where they became, you know, great cuisine as opposed to just something that was parked by the construction, you know, place.
Yeah.
Some people.
Yeah.
And so he got that guy to help teach him how to actually cook. And then, so they did end up doing this Netflix show where they recreate the recipes that you see in the movie. Plus they go to a bunch of other different, chefs and do different things with them, learn different techniques, make different things. So it's a cooking show.
Wow.
It's kind of a neat cooking show and it shows that Favreau really learned really how to cook from this guy. Like,
damn.
Hardcore, really good methods.
Okay, so we're talking like this guy. This is different from what I would consider is, and I know you're not big on this kind of stuff.
It wasn't quite method.
Yeah, it's not quite method, and I can understand that because this is something about learning about the craft itself that's involved around the character rather than trying to live the character. That's a whole different story.
No, and that's just it. He wasn't trying to live the character as much as he wanted to understand the craft because he wanted to. One of the things that when he originally brought the guy in as a consultant, the chef in as a consultant.
Cool.
And the chef said, hey, I'll consult, but if we're going to be showing cooking and we're going to be showing people doing this stuff, that's what's going to be centered on is the food. I want to make sure that whatever you're cooking, you're doing it exactly the right way. Because every time I see a restaurant movie, they do everything wrong. They make so many different mistakes. We are going to do this exactly the right way.
That's cool, man.
I'm
going
to teach you how to do it exactly perfect. That's the only way I'm going to consult on it.
That's great.
Favreau's like, okay, this is all in this web series, that's this Netflix series about him, you know, learning how to do this. And then, again, them going off to these different places and cooking for different people and different people cooking for them. It's a great little show. But anyway,
So Favreau's having a beef with Kathleen Kennedy, apparently, is what's going on?
Well, Favreau and Kathleen Kennedy are having this issue about the direction that the Star Wars universe went. This what we saw in this new trilogy was Kathleen Kennedy's vision. Favreau thinks it should have a different vision than what Kathleen Kennedy's is. And Favreau's got some pretty high... The thing is, he's been a producer on almost all of the Marvel movies since Iron Man 1 and 2. So when you're talking Infinity War and Endgame, Favreau's a producer on those movies. Okay. He's got bank.
Okay,
he's got connection. He's got connection at this point.
Okay. All right. This is okay. So knowing that that's the case, this is some serious shit. Because
Favreau's big money with Disney at this point.
Oh yeah, everything Star Wars. Yeah, everything he does turns out freaking phenomenal.
So there's beef with the two of them.
Oh no.
The theory is that they may be able to, that they're going to try to use something that was introduced in the Rebels TV series. I think I had mentioned to you at one point where the main protagonist of the Rebels series ends up in an area that's kind of the space between spaces.
Uh-huh.
Through the Force. It's called the Veil of the Force.
Uh-huh.
And it's theorized that during a moment in Rise of Skywalker, people should have seen this movie by now. So,
You're not giving anything away. It's been out for six months.
You saw it finally, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I saw it. I saw it in the. Okay. I saw it in the theater, I believe. Yeah.
Okay, so you remember the point where Rey is on the she's in the Emperor's throne room on the second Death Star that's crashed into one of the Endor moons.
Yes. Right? Yeah.
She finds that place where she's the room that's off of the throne room.
Yeah, it's like this in between realms hallucination thing that happens.
It's kind of like the dark cave that Luke goes into in Empire, where he sees Vader, fights Vader, cuts Vader's head off, or mask open, and it's his own head.
Yeah, is that the scene where she sees Dark Rey?
She does see Dark Rey in that scene.
Okay,
but what's notable in that scene is it appears that there may be, and I have to go watch it again because I didn't necessarily notice it entirely, but it appears that there may be mirrors in the scene.
Yes, I remember that. There were mirrors in the scene.
Kind of comes out of mirrors.
Yes, there were mirrors in the scene. So,
the theory that's coming out is the mirrors are actually part of the kind of device that helped the Emperor focus his force powers to get into and try to manipulate within this veil of the force, this space between spaces thing, okay?
Right.
And the theory is that it is possible, depending on where you enter or exit this space between spaces, to move through time.
Okay.
Because the space between spaces exists outside of time. So if you go to these various, and I remember the episode of the Rebels where Ezra Bridger is there, and he actually pulls Ahsoka Tano through what is basically like a mirror. It's a portal, but it could also be looked at as a mirror. He pulls her through one of these portals when she's about to be killed, essentially saving her.
Hold on real quick. Recap on Ahsoka Tano. Isn't Ahsoka Tano played by Rosario Dawson? Is that her?
Ahsoka Tano will be played by Rosario Dawson in the second season of The Mandalorian, but Ahsoka Tano is...
Isn't she voiced by Rosario Dawson?
No, she was not. She was voiced by Ashley Eckstein.
Oh,
okay. Who's just a pretty regular voice actor.
Okay.
She appeared in the Clone Wars animated series.
Okay.
As Anakin Skywalker's Padawan learner.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay, so this is some kind of space-time portal thing.
In a sense, it's the idea, and this has been used in science fiction when it comes to time travel at various points, that there may be an existence, a place that exists outside of space and time that allows you the ability to access various points in space and time. And the idea being that it would be possible for there to be a change in the future if, for instance, when... The theory that's being posited is that when the Emperor fell down the shaft at the end of Return of the Jedi, Darth Vader threw him,
yep,
that he used the ability with this veil of the Force to transport himself away from there before actually dying. The blue flash you see is not him dying, but is actually him transporting himself into the veil. Which there is a similar effect that happens when he actually tries to kill Ezra Bridger while Ezra Bridger is in this veil space, and it's a very similar looking effect with I believe blue flame. I'm gonna have to go back and watch Clone Wars now because this is all kind of, I just literally read about this today, so I'm kind of adding the pieces up as I'm going through it back over with you.
Uh-huh.
the theory being that he transported himself at that point and then transported himself to Exegol, the planet that he's eventually found upon. But right. the strain it took on him is what basically destroyed his body. Okay, and made
wait him a minute, wait a minute. Okay, okay.
Made him have to create all these clone bodies to live in.
Okay, so I think I have an idea where you're going with this. I'm not going to give it away. I want you to tell me, but I will tell you this. I have another idea where somebody may be using a very similar plot device for another major movie series, and I would like to talk about that. I don't know if you don't. I don't know okay. if you want to make it second half or if you want to make it second part of this half or we'll whichever see, way you want to go. Yeah, I want to see how far this goes. I'm very intrigued. I have not heard about this. And okay. I want to hear more, and then maybe we could talk about what I was talking about.
So the idea being, if this may be just one of just the one universe where Palpatine was able to get himself through the veil and then get back out of the veil to Exegol. Maybe in another universe, he doesn't get that to happen.
Wait a minute. Hold on one second.
He dies within the veil.
Wait a minute.
As in, it may be a multiverse situation, or somebody kills him in the veil before he's able to get back out of it to Exegol, and as a result, his death and his inability to get back to Exegol, and then create the Snoke clones, create Snoke and all the different clones of him, create his own clones to where he has a clone that has no force ability that ends up leaving and meeting a woman and having a child that eventually is Rey as his technically grandchild, but really the child of one of his clones. There's no Rey, there's no Snoke, so there's nobody to tempt Ben Solo away from the teachings of Luke Skywalker, and so there's none of the conflict of the First Order. So it gives the
are
ability.
You, wait a minute. Hold on. One.
It basically wipes the slate clean and gives
they're
the ability.
Retconning the third movie? They're retconning episode 9.
No, the point would be to retcon episode 7, 8, and 9. All of
the
them.
Entire series of all three of the movies, they just busted their ass yes. and did all of that, and they're going to retcon the whole fucking thing?
Well, it may be considered one of the legends of Star Wars.
Shut and up.
Hold on now.
Okay.
That was my first.
I am
that
so
was my
torn.
First Hold on.
I am so torn as far as that. And I have a lot of now things, but yeah. Yeah. Okay. Here, okay. Yeah. You got to explain here's this. This is nuts.
My first response was like, what the fuck? But then my second response was, hold on a second. If they have this ability to, through this veil of the Force, change different events and make things happen differently. This is almost like the idea of the Marvel What If. And I always love the idea of Marvel What If, the Marvel What If series. Were you familiar with that at all?
No, but I do know of another set of series that is very similar, and I find it really funny.
They are doing an animated What If series for Marvel.
Yeah.
And
DC has a counter series to this. They've done one for a long time. It's called the Elseworlds stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've had the Elseworlds.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's
which I absolutely love, by the way.
My thought is this gives the opportunity for a multiverse theory, and it gives the opportunity for other people to try to tell the stories and tell different ones. Because here's the thing, I already had to come to grips with the fact that I was never going to see Mara Jade Skywalker. I was never going to see Anakin Solo and Jason and Gianna Solo. I was never going to see Ben Skywalker, which would have been Luke's son. I was never going to see so many different things that happened in all of these books that I had read about what happened after. I mean, there's a whole Yuuzhan Vong invasion, which is like an alien species. It's from the way the unknown regions that comes and invades, and they're a species that terraforms entire planets to become sentient living planets, and they can't be sensed through the Force because they exist in without connection to the Force. I mean, there's hundreds of books that are basically gone when they changed all this up. So the idea that they're going to change it again, at first, like I said, my first thing was like, what the hell, man. Why are they doing this? But at the same time, like, Well, if they can make this a part of story canon, that events can be changed depending on certain things that happen, well, then crap, they can do anything they want.
It's the capability of milking things as much as they can. Yeah. Okay. So financially, to me, it comes down to milking things as much as they can to get as much as they can out of it. However,
but it also gives the ability to tell different stories and see different outcomes and different versions of things,
right?
Which can be kind of neat.
But here's,
I've seen many TV shows that have time travel elements that do this. Some do it more successfully than others.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. DC has a big thing about doing this. I've watched a decent amount of the CW DC universe, mm-hmm. and the very second they threw in the Flash and his ability to actually travel through time.
Mm-hmm.
Shit just went crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then his ability to travel to different universes, and it's like, not only can you travel in time, but guess what? You can go to a completely different universe, and then you can go to this one. And you can go to one where the Green Arrow is a Nazi. What?
Yeah. Yes.
And so Supergirl, by the way, Supergirl's a Nazi.
Yep. 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 They have gone that realm, and I think it's great because that's one of the most powerful things that you can do with the DC universe is the alternate storyline taking the established storylines and going far beyond that. I don't know where you wanted to put this. Actually, that was part of what I was going to talk about in the next part.
Was Elseworlds?
Was the possibility of Elseworlds and what may be happening with the film series, as far as rumors have come out. I've been looking up a couple of things.
Oh, God. Are we going to talk about this?
Yes.
Because we discussed it already, and you know I'm going to be the dick that everybody hates.
Well, I know. We personally have, but we haven't put it on the podcast, and I totally understand that. But there's also some other things that may pop up.
Yeah, okay.
Look, man, if we're going to talk about retcon in the last three fucking Star Wars movies that I spent my hard-earned money on buying and then going out in the theater and seeing, not necessarily in that order, we could talk about the DC retcon after the shit show that was Justice League.
I mean, yeah, but Star Wars is better, though.
That's completely what the hell false equivalency?
No, Star Wars is better. There's no false equivalency.
There's a false equivalency there.
I completely and utterly disagree.
But anyway. First off, Star Wars doesn't have fucking Batman, so I'll tell you that right there.
Okay, you know
Star Wars would be better with Batman.
No, I've seen that video, by the way. I've seen that video.
Hey, that video was fantastic and went exactly the way that it should have.
It's completely and utterly wrong.
Why?
It's completely and utterly wrong.
Oh, bullshit.
Because Darth Vader wins that fight.
Yeah, I know. That's not wrong.
Wait, I thought
maybe
I saw a different video.
You must have seen an alternate. No, Batman doesn't win in the official ending. They film multiple endings depending on how close it is. So what we're talking about is a YouTube series called Superpower Beatdown. It is a fan-made series where they cross over stuff. It's similar to another series I've talked about on this channel called Death Battle. The difference between Death Battle and Superpower Beatdown is that Death Battle is animated and is based on actual stats. Like, they take real-world physics-based calculations and find out whether or not somebody's power capabilities, their strength, their weapons, and all of these things is able to... They compare the powers of two similar type people. Like, and they'll take weird people. They've taken Goku versus Superman. They've done... And then they'll go as far as they pitted Batman versus Spider-Man or Batman versus Black Panther, or one of my favorite ones was they did Deadpool versus Rainbow Dash. The fucking My Little Pony. And they took the capability, yeah, but they did everything. They considered the ability to break the fourth wall. They considered world-bending abilities and their pop culture reference capabilities and all of these things. And they put them in a realm of absurdity where one would win over another one. They do it very, very well. Now, that is Death Battle. What I'm talking about is another one called Superpower Beatdown. And the difference between the two is this one is vote-based. So it's who gets more votes, that's who wins. Which I already don't like as a general idea. However, when they film it, it's absolutely fantastic. It is full cinematic quality kind of stuff. And so they've pitted some people against other people that are completely unrelated to each other. Wolverine versus Wonder Woman, where Wolverine shows up on Themyscira and gets his ass handed to him by Wonder Woman. And by the way, the actors they pick up are fantastic. And also, I've seen Wolverine versus the Predator. I've seen... it's great, some of the stuff that they've done.
I remember seeing the Green Power Ranger against... I think it was somebody from one of the fighting games. I'm not sure who.
They've done the White Ranger versus, I think it was the Green
Ranger. Maybe it was the White Ranger.
They've done both. And they've actually, because the guy who runs Superpower Beatdown, they got Jason David Frank. And he's actually working with him on another series of movies that is either a series or it's a feature film that he's doing something with. I'll link that to you, James, so you can see it. And we might link it on the podcast as well, because it looks great. It's a whole self-produced independent series that's doing extremely well. I think it's Legend of the White Dragon or something like that.
I've heard about it.
This is a kickstarted series.
I actually follow Jason David Frank because
I
will admit wholeheartedly that the Green Ranger arc in the first season of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers was the shit.
Oh, yeah, oh,
and
definitely.
I absolutely love that entire arc.
Oh,
plus,
yeah.
Plus, like, the Green Dragon Zord basically looks like Godzilla.
Yep.
So,
straight
I mean,
up,
there's
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's got the whole Mecha Godzilla thing going with it. I think it's fantastic. I loved it. Think about it. Like, that's the only series you could ever see Voltron versus Godzilla, because you know that's exactly where they got both of those things from.
Basically.
And it's dope. But, it was dope. So
it was Batman versus Darth Vader, the one that I saw.
And the official
version I saw was actually Batman winning, which is why I'm like, never would happen.
He wouldn't have. No. Yeah, that definitely wouldn't happen. What actually happens in that episode is Darth Vader crushes the Batwing. He force crushes the Batwing. After that, Batman is standing there and Darth Vader breaks his neck and then lets him drop out into space, float out into space.
Yeah.
It's dope.
That seems more appropriate.
Yeah. That's what happens rather than Batman last seconding Superman out of, because in this storyline, Darth Vader has captured Superman and he's imprisoned on the Death Star. And Batman infiltrates the Death Star and there's all this badass stuff that happens.
Which, I mean,
Batman, his use of gadgets and all that kind of stuff, the lightsaber fight and all that kind of stuff is relatively good. I love the fact that the little thing that he did where he ran the EMP, he runs the EMP and then disables Darth Vader's armor. So now Darth Vader has to concentrate his force powers on living. I thought that was very well done. That was a good little nod.
And it would definitely be a tactic he would use, but
for sure.
And just
but he
just
has
for
to prepare.
To understand,
he has to know.
There is one thing that Superman is kind of vulnerable to, even within the DC comics. He apparently does not do well with anything that's magic based, and the Force is almost kind of magic based.
Yes.
For some reason, he has very little to no defense of that. I'm guessing there was no magic on Krypton, so.
That was one of the biggest things is Krypton is not a magic based thing. And yeah, absolutely. He is more well known in the science based. He is more.
You didn't think I knew about that weakness.
His weakness to magic is big, dude. It's major, too. It will fuck him up. But what's crazy is like at the same time, he's able to lift a book made of infinity or whatever. So this is just a weird thing.
Comic books are weird. Anyway, well, that's a good question. You probably could. Here's one. We're going to take a break.
Okay.
Here's something I want you to postulate over the break. Okay. Because there have been multiple Marvel DC crossovers.
Yes.
Could Superman lift Mjolnir? And why? If he could. Think about it. When we get back from the break, I want your answer.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
We'll see y'all in a minute.
Yep. Hey friends, this is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thexennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the show.
And we are back.
Hey, Mike. Yes.
Do you have the answer to my question? Can Superman pick up Mjolnir? And why, if so?
I would technically say, okay, this depends on what universe Superman it is. However, let's just go with traditional universe Superman, okay?
We're going to go with traditional Superman, yeah.
Traditional Superman, I would say yes.
And why?
Because the traditional universe Superman is... The thing is, man, he is theoretically considered a pure of heart person, and that is why. He may be, it's the fish out of water story and all that kind of stuff, but we're not going that deep into it.
The point of the answer is, see, there are a lot of people who try to answer with, well, Superman's super strong and he can do this and that. No.
Oh, hell no.
It isn't about strength.
Nope.
It isn't about strength.
No.
Superman is worthy.
Exactly. He's worthy. Superman is the, I will tell you this, Superman is the Captain America of the DC universe. He is.
No, I would say Captain America is even more flawed. Keep in mind, he's been called, I believe, the oldest Boy Scout in the comics before.
Yeah.
It's just about him being worthy. But
absolutely.
Anyway.
Yeah, and that's what it is. Superman would be worthy. Now, we're not going into the Elseworld Supermans, and I'm not even talking about, like, man, has he gotten dark, especially recently. Holy shit. But that's a whole different ball game there. Man, I've seen some good, dark Superman stories, though.
Now, here's the thing. Isn't that what you were going to talk about? I was talking about some Star Wars multiverse stuff.
Right.
You said you had some multiverse stuff, and it was DC-based. So
it is.
I'm going to turn it all over to you, sir.
All right. So there has been some film rumors, funny enough, coming around in the DC universe type of setup here. And I have my speculative stuff, but I'm not going to get into that until later. Okay. So apparently what's been going on is, if anybody has seen Justice League, movie spoilers, it sucked ass. And I'm saying this as a DC fan. Like, I loved so much about the people that played, like, all of the actors were great. The only stuff that ruined the living shit out of Justice League and Batman v Superman was all of the post-production and all of the corporate interference in the actual story. Zack Snyder.
I think there was less problem with Batman vs Superman, Dawn of Justice. I think there was less problem with that. But I think what happened is the story that Zack was trying to tell with Dawn of Justice and then Justice League and then what would have been the second Justice League movie,
which was
the original plan. I think he was trying to tell a complete arc with those stories.
Right.
And the tone that he had built and some of the things that he had done with it, I think we're all working towards something appropriate.
Right.
And in fact, honestly, the one scene that everybody has the most problems with in Dawn of Justice, the Martha scene, is actually, to me, one of the more interesting scenes. Because, I mean, people say it's handled horribly, but it's like, dude, you find out that this dude, you're about to kill this alien dude, and you find out that he's just worried about somebody named Martha, and that triggers you to think of, like, your mom, and that's his mom. And it's like,
right. What
the fuck, man? And I'm sorry, but you've seen countless times in movies and stories where all it takes is that one moment to have that, we share something. Maybe this isn't such a bad person after all.
Absolutely.
And the problem is that people turn it into, you know, oh, look at Martha. Well, fuck, they do. Their moms do still have, you know, they have the same freaking name. And I'm sorry, but that's Batman's entire persona is based on his parents being shot and killed.
Right.
And,
right. That's the thing. He is
The thing that's most bothersome to me about it is they've always focused on his dad being killed. But, like, this is the first time that they focus more on his mom.
Right.
And it's like, you know, it's always about Thomas Wayne, but what about his mom? And this is him older in age having this moment of, like, this guy wants to save his mom. I couldn't save my mom. I'm going to save this dude's mom. And it's
right.
Like,
there's
mom, then he doesn't have to deal with what I've dealt with.
Exactly.
He has a chance. He has a chance at redemption. He has a chance to be good. I can only be good because, you know, I'm a necessary evil, and I've gotten to the point where I'm more evil than I should be. But I've lost the good in me because of all of this. I'm pushing those boundaries at this point. I'm branding people. I mean, I'm on the edge here, and yet I can possibly save this guy's mom, and
right.
maybe redeem myself a little bit.
That's
and even some yeah. of the stuff you see in some of the stuff you see in the Justice League movie is there's a little bit of Batman maybe having some redemption at that point. Maybe, you know, I saved a Martha. I saved this. I did this at least right. But well, at the same time, he's dealing with the loss of the fact that Superman ended up having to die as a result of all of it.
Right.
But that's the thing is, if and hopefully we'll be lucky, as I think we said on here before, but I know you and I have talked about, hopefully we will get to see the Zack Snyder cut at some point and see what true story he was envisioning.
Right.
Because the roots that happened in Dawn of Justice, if they had taken properly and grown properly throughout Justice League, I think we would have seen two good movies that would have kicked off the universe well. And I think that the bringing in of a different mindset person didn't help the situation, especially yes. a person whose mindset is even when he's dealt with dark things, they're always bright and fluffy dark things. Okay. And this is coming from a big Marvel fan, but this is what Joss Whedon does. Joss Whedon takes dark okay. things and makes them bright and fluffy. Even when yes. he had one of the darker TV series that was on at the time, this is a series about witches and vampires. The girl's name is Buffy, and she falls in love with a vampire named Angel. He takes dark and scary things and turns them all fluffy and bright.
Oh, he did it with Firefly too. Like that's his thing. However, the reason why they got him, and I know the reason why they got him because he was fresh off of Avengers, and Avengers was a fucking smash.
Well, so, and because they
it was it was corporate deal, level it, thought here. It was nothing they, more than yeah, that.
They thought he could deal with a superhero combo team and be able to deal with all the special effects. And here's the thing. The first Avengers movie, not bad. Avengers Age of Ultron, nobody wants to watch that movie. It's boring as hell. It's crap. And in fact, it was so boring that Joss Whedon didn't do another Avengers movie. He didn't do another movie for Marvel. The first one worked out great. He brought the team together well. Fine. It needed to evolve. The second Avengers didn't evolve enough.
Oh, wow.
And that's the thing is if you look at the movies past the second Avengers, there's an evolution to the movies where many of them are not just as simple as being a comic book movie. They have various layers to them.
Well, you can look at Buffy the Vampire Slayer and see that. The evolution of the characters, the storylines, the plot devices, everything else, like, continued to move forward and move upward and grow and develop. And that was part of what Joss was doing the entire time. Buffy the Vampire Slayer is honestly one of the best TV series in the history of television. Like, it's so deep.
But when he went on to movies, he would get to a point where he could start to develop things, but then he would stagnate a little, and it would kind of be the same thing over and over again. And you're right, Buffy was groundbreaking for the time, but then he did Angel, which was basically the same damn thing as Buffy.
Oh yeah,
over and over again.
And that's the thing is he's familiar with that type of character development. He is the strongest with television. He did it with Firefly as well. But here's the thing about feature films. You have to have that same amount of character development in an hour and a half to 2.5 hours worth of time. Sometimes you could split them into a two-parter, but that's not often.
Yeah, you don't get entire seasons to get that done.
Yeah, and that's half the mistake that was happening with the DC movies themselves. That was half the mistake. Here's the thing. With Marvel, you had how many films came out before the first Avengers film? You're the expert on this.
I'm not entirely sure. The thing that Marvel did is they planned out in phases how they would release each movie building up to the next movies.
Yeah.
And so this was a multi-phase plan all the way until the end of basically Endgame into how they would introduce the characters and bring it all to the point of where Endgame was.
Right. Real quick, I don't mean to interrupt, but concentrating on Avengers the film itself, when you really think about it, you look at the amount of film, you look at the amount of films that had come before Avengers and the establishment of as many characters there were that you already knew, that you already loved. And the only ones that I could think of that were introduced that weren't already familiar by the time Avengers came out as heroes, because let's, you have to think the villains essentially get introduced as the major villains of the story, right? You have tertiary villains, but the main villains, the ones that are part of the big fight at the end, that are the focal point, are not the tertiary villains. So Loki technically doesn't count as a main villain in this storyline, personally, I don't think. But when you look at the introduction of characters that are part of the main plot line, you have fucking two main plot characters, and that is Black Widow and Hawkeye. And I think Black Widow was introduced in the second Iron Man movie, I think, right?
Actually, Black Widow is introduced in the second Iron Man movie, and Hawkeye is actually introduced in Thor.
So you're telling me that none of the heroes, the mainline heroes, were introduced in that film? They already had a history.
Every single one of them had a movie that they had already appeared in. So I was thinking about as you were talking about it. There was Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2. Mm-hmm. There was Thor, the first Thor. There was Captain America, the first Avenger, and there was the Incredible Hulk, the Edward Norton Hulk, which is considered.
We have to consider MCU. That one, technically speaking. Yeah, exactly.
All of those had already come out. So basically, every single character had been established. Every character, with the exception of the Chitauri, which are the army that they fight.
Right.
It's the only thing that had not been introduced in previous stuff. But so everybody already had backstory and their own movies of backstory.
Exactly.
All the Avengers was a coming together of everything.
Exactly.
Which is why it was easy to do. You didn't have to tell backstory. You could just bring everything in together.
Exactly. And that's the mistake of that's the biggest mistake of Batman v Superman and of the Justice League movie that came in afterwards. The point I'm getting at is that Marvel was able to take their time and really work this out. And then Warner's sitting there trying to play catch up. And what they do is they take beloved characters that are already in established films. By the way, like Christian Bale could have easily been contracted in to be part of the Superman universe. Goyer was part of the development team with all three of those Christian Bale movies.
I disagree with you on that. I firmly believe that the Batman of the Christian Bale movies has to exist in a universe where something like Superman doesn't exist.
Okay.
And can't exist.
Okay, let's accept that, because obviously that's where they went to, and that's fine. All I'm saying is
there's a level of attempt at realism in those.
It just overconvolutes it?
That I think it would take away from the true gritty realism that was attempted with those.
Right.
Those were meant to exist. If you change Batman into a rogue cop, or the Joker just into some mass serial killer,
right?
It still works. The story still basically works,
right?
For the Dark Knight, that story still for the most part works. Hell, if you change him again in the Dark Knight Rises, it still kind of works. It's about a vigilante going up against these criminals. There's nothing overtly, even a character like Ra's al Ghul is the supernatural elements are basically taken away and given scientific explanations, which is great. Yeah. It works. It works within that trilogy. It works within that world of this specific version of Batman is going to be rooted in a level of reality, which I think is good. It's useful. It works.
So in order for this,
and the way the villains are set up, it works. So the necessity of a new and different Batman for the world, that the universe, the DC universe that was created by the Man of Steel movie. Cause let's be honest, that's the movie that creates this universe.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I think Dawn of Justice works great as an introduction for Batman, and I think it works great as a mini introduction for Wonder Woman, because shortly after you get the Wonder Woman movie. I think those work great together.
And that's fine. The mistake comes in with the fact that they should have just kept it at the characters that were involved in the film. You didn't have to see that little side, like, inserted scene with fucking Cyborg and Aquaman and all that stuff. You didn't have to see that. Those were unnecessary. They didn't even need to be there. It actually convoluted the storyline as introductions.
I think those scenes would have worked well if...
Yeah, if the movie was 4 hours long and you had time to actually introduce them.
I think they worked. Those little scenes would have worked well in Dawn of Justice, and it would have worked if you made sure that a cyborg movie and I would have done an Aquaman movie and a Flash movie personally, and then I would have made, as my understanding is, Snyder actually made Cyborg a much bigger part of his story. His version of the movie, Cyborg, was a much bigger part.
Oh, you're talking about... I think you're moving on to Justice League. Because Batman v Superman, Cyborg wasn't really...
Into Justice League, Cyborg was a bigger part. And I actually think if Snyder's cut had happened and Cyborg had the part that he had, and then even though Aquaman came out after that...
Right.
I think Aquaman was okay without too much backstory, and then when you get the backstory, it's okay. And I even think they could have got away without doing a Flash movie yet, because one, so much has been done recently on the Flash with the CW universe.
Right.
But two, I think that the Flash movie would have been another one that they could have done a movie after if they had had the ability to focus on Cyborg, because I think he's the one character in the Justice League movie, at least on the good guy side. I think he's the one character that needed more and didn't get it. He was the one that felt lacking.
Okay,
and I honestly think if he had the right stuff in that movie, as far as the right amount of time, the right amount of backstory,
right?
I think if that had happened and developed through there, I think that would have made the movie exquisitely better. And then, and the other thing that would have made it exquisitely better is the damn villain being taken care of the proper way. This is where the Justice League movie fails.
Well, hold on. We're moving forward a little quick because I was still talking about BVS. So let's with what was established in Batman v Superman. It was just overall. I think it can be agreed between the two of us is that Batman v Superman was too shortened. It was too. There was too much involvement in trying to cut things down to make it digestible for a general public that. What Snyder was trying to do with it just was not pulled off properly. And even with that one,
we can look at the villain and look at the awful, awful casting of the villain in that movie.
Okay. I kind of go back and forth on that personally, because I think that Jesse Eisenberg had a potential, and I think that Snyder had a completely different plan. And the problem was, it had to do with the cutting, and it had to do with the execution. It was convoluted. This is why I want to see the new Justice League film, because I want to see if there is character development with Luther that actually makes sense with the ending and with everything else that goes to it. Because he does some badass stuff in that film. And let's move on to Justice League based on that, okay?
Hold on. I just want to say, it isn't as much about... I think Eisenberg did the best that he could with what he was given.
Yeah.
I think the decision to make Luther younger is the real key issue. I think that the younger version of Luther does not play right.
Because Luther would be Luther would be just as old as Bruce Wayne, in theory,
Luther should be of age with Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least of age with Bruce Wayne, maybe 5 years older or something like that.
Yeah.
So he should be a gentleman that's midlife. And that's I think the key problem is there's also the fact that Luther in the especially, and again, I know things are changed from comics to movies. Well, one of the key things that have always kind of stayed firm about Luther is that he is an imposing presence. He's a super different rich
type
dude.
Okay, there's a different type of imposition with Luther. Here's the thing, though. Luther does have that imposing presence. The only difference is that he's a fresh one. It's not the fact that he's established to be intimidating right off the bat. He proves himself by showing what he's capable of in these two films, and he does it very well. He proves that he is traditional Lex Luthor, but he is way sneakier about it because he's still getting in to becoming this respected person, and things get all thrown the fuck out of whack. And
here's the thing.
That's where I see it, especially like
I'm gonna take
Peach Tea was a great plot device.
Okay, I disagree, but okay.
I'll give it to you.
But here's the thing. I would sanction this Luther. I would be okay with this Luther. And here's a deep dive on the comics. Since they delved into the elements of the death of Superman with Doomsday and all of that, I would be totally open to the idea if this version of Lex Luthor that we saw was going to end up being in a twist, Lex Luthor 2,
yep.
The clone of the original Lex
yep.
Luthor.
Yep.
I would totally be okay with that. And by the way, if anybody listening does not know that, go and find yourself a way to read through either the novelized version or the actual comics of the death of Superman. The yep. Lex Luthor that appears in there is a younger guy, red hair, speaks in an Australian accent, but he is actually a clone of the original Lex Luthor who was dying of kryptonite poisoning. He's cloned and his brain, basically his entire brain pattern, is put into this clone. And the clone is younger, healthier, and doesn't have the male pattern baldness that makes it so that Luther had to have a bald head the entire time. Seriously, it's actually mentioned in the novelization that he's happy he doesn't have the male pattern baldness.
Right.
He also has a Supergirl from a different dimension as his girlfriend. But that's a whole other part of the story.
Of course.
If it's that Lex Luthor, if it's a clone of the original Lex Luthor, and that's the situation with it, then I would be like, oh, very good, Mr. Snyder. You really went deep on this cut, and I get why he's young and eccentric and weird and stuff.
I think
because you know maybe brain pattern doesn't follow through.
I think that might have been the plan at one point. Actually,
if that was, then I totally understand. Because the first time I saw that he was cast as it, I'm like, are they doing the Lex Luthor too? Are we going to get this idea that Lex Luthor had died? But why? He didn't die of kryptonite poisoning. So what's the other reason that he's going to die? Because he hadn't been fighting with Superman for years. So what's the other reason he's going to die? This is weird. So
right.
the fact that the Doomsday thing happened so early in this version of Superman's establishment, because in the original Superman's establishment, that specific run of the comics had been running for a long time.
Right.
There had been multiple iterations of the Justice League. That Superman had been around for decades on Earth before he encountered Doomsday. So, I mean, it's harder to replicate that unless you do it exactly like, hey, it's an older Superman doing this. But whatever. Point being, that's the only way I feel that Lex Luthor works, but that's just my feeling on it. Anyway,
you were saying that
his performance as Lex Luthor trails or moves properly into Justice League. Keep going, sir.
Yeah, okay. So as far as that's concerned, you kind of hit the nail on the head. I thought this Lex Luthor, every time I look at him, I'm thinking Lex Jr. I'm thinking Lex 2, like what you're talking about.
Okay.
So what's going on with Eisenberg's character is he has all of Lex's capability and conniving, but I think there's an issue with the cloning process, and I don't think that actually gets truly established. So all these guys are walking around looking at this Lex Luthor guy, wondering who the hell he is, where there has to be some underlying thing, because all of them seem to mysteriously revere him and there's no real explanation except for the fact that when he actually starts acting out, everybody shakes in their fucking boots at this guy right out of nowhere. And then he starts doing the Peach Tea plot point in Justice League was masterful. That was a Lex Luthor maneuver. That was maniacal, and it was planned, and it was almost, I would say, almost Joker-esque. And I know that's what a lot of people are kind of like throwing it out to be. They were trying to make him another Joker-esque character. I don't think that was the case. I think what was going on is that there was a genetic anomaly that made this version of Lex Luthor more outgoing and far less calm than the original version. And
I would say it made him erratic.
Yeah. Say what?
It made him erratic. He may still have the ability to do some of the planning, but there's some emotional control issues.
The calculating is obvious in a different aspect, in a different feature.
When you think about his obsession with his quote unquote dad's office, and the one painting turning it the other way, but leaving it all the same. But he seems very comfortable in the office. Maybe it's his office and you know, this is just, yeah. I mean, that works. And again, if that's the case, I can say perfect, wonderful, then you did it great. If that's not the case, this is the only Lex Luthor, that's where I'm like, nah, I can't buy into him as Lex Luthor.
I understand. I can completely understand that. I was opening my mind to the possibility of Lex Luthor. Once I saw Eisenberg, I was like, okay, I'm going to have to take a look at this in a completely different mindset, expect nothing and see what it is. And that's where I went with it. Now, that being said, and knowing what I know of the DC Universe, there's been a few other things that have come to light. First off, obviously, the establishment of Batman is with Ben Affleck. Personally, I think he was perfect at both versions of Batman. I think we've talked about this on more than one occasion.
I am a fan of Batfleck.
Yes. He is the proper embodiment of Bruce Wayne as a philanthropist and as somebody who is in control of a situation. He's a proper embodiment of Batman in that he is ruthless and that he is give no fucks. Now, here's where things get real crazy, okay? So I'm going to do a quick little thing on the Flash, all right? In the Justice League film, there is a scene that I'm just kind of bringing everybody up to par to, where the Flash shows up in some Speed Force portal. Bruce Wayne is asleep in the newer Batcave area, and he wakes up to the Speed Force flashing around, doesn't know what's going on, and the Flash shows up with a beard, with a full beard, and it's Ezra Miller's Flash. He shows up with a full beard, and he says something about Lois being the key, and he says something about, damn it, I traveled too far, and then he disappears. And that was it. And there's no explanation. It's just there, and then it's gone. And there's all these other things that happen elseworlds, while I think actually a sequence that happens before that is very similar to a Red Sun Superman series dream sequence, which is... Yeah. I just saw Red Sun Superman, and I was not familiar with that comic continuity. That is an Elseworlds story that you need to watch, sir. That is amazing.
I'm familiar with the Red Sun.
You need to just watch the animated series. I think it is fantastic, yep. Especially in this current political climate, to watch it. It brings things to life, man.
When I saw that it had been made, I had intended to watch it, but I am somewhat familiar with the series and when it originally happened. So I'm a fan of the idea of what if something happened differently? The idea that if you take a left turn here, instead of taking the right turn, you could be creating at that moment a splinter universe,
right.
And in the other universe, the right turn is taken. And it could be any number of multiverses where just the slightest difference where your alien spacecraft lands can make a whole difference in the way that the entire world goes.
One of the things that happens in this is, I will not get deep into it because I don't want to spoil it for you. The development of Batman is absolutely completely different, and it is phenomenal. This is one of my favorite alternate versions of Batman I've seen, and I will not get into it. It is not the same as Thomas Wayne Batman, but it is very different, and it is very dark, and it is so good. It's something I didn't expect. So,
okay, that's good.
Yeah, it's something I didn't expect.
I don't remember Batman's development as much in that. But that's okay. It gives me reason to watch it.
Yeah, anyway. Batman does show up. And it's great. Fantastic.
I do believe that the sequence you're talking about, the Flash sequence where he opens the time portal and is trying to talk to Bruce, I firmly believe that that's something that would have been used later, and they probably would have done similar to what Marvel did in a fast forward sequence, because Marvel between Infinity War basically and Endgame, it happens in Endgame. There's a 5-year kind of flash forward.
Uh-huh.
That deals with the fallout of the snap and half of all living things disappearing and 5 years down the line.
Right.
I think that the going theory, my understanding was, stop me if I'm stepping on what you're trying to say, but the going theory was that Darkseid was supposed to show up, and Darkseid was supposed to be able to take over and manipulate Superman.
I do not know that.
Control him.
I do not know that. That was not where I was going with it.
Because that was my understanding of where the story was originally supposed to go, and it was going to be a double movie.
Yeah.
Was that it was going to be something where they try to fight Darkseid, and Darkseid is able to take over Superman, which has happened in the comic books on multiple occasions. And then Superman becomes his enforcer, and all these other heroes have to be out on the run. And then there was going to be the point of, I'm assuming, Flash doing this backwards trip, and then them trying to do... Because the backwards trip was done, Batman somehow or another made it seem like Lois was killed, but he actually hid Lois away and is able to use Lois to redeem Clark, which eventually is done in the Justice League movie that stops, crazy undead.
Right. Lois Superman. Is the key, right? Yeah, exactly.
That snaps him back in. But I think it was going to be used in a much larger sense after there was a lot of destruction and decimation in the world, and you snap Superman back in, he comes and rallies and beats everything.
Right.
And then the rest of it would be about the DC world picking itself back up and putting itself back together after this gigantic calamity. And then by the thinning of the herd of people, you would see more metahumans that would appear and have various abilities and things that they could do, and be able to broaden the universe more.
Wow.
To me, that would have been the way to make all of it happen the right way.
And I'm curious if that...
then you have that huge level event that,
I'm curious if that may be the initial plan. And so I will move forward from this, and I will add a couple of things. So the first thing I'm going to divulge is apparently, and I have not seen this footage, so I don't know if you've seen this footage or not. One of the things that actually happens in the CW series, Crisis on Infinite Earths, that happens.
I know what you're talking about.
There is a scene where the Flash is trapped in the Speed Force, and he meets up with the Ezra Miller version of the Flash, apparently.
Yes, the Ezra Miller version of the Flash does appear in the CW universe, making it so that the CW universe, actually the CW multiverse, which gets consolidated down considerably during this entire thing,
yep,
is a viable DC universe connected to the... The film universe, yes. Okay.
So one of the things, the reason why they did Crisis on Infinite Earths originally in the 80s is because they had so many different stories, and that what they were trying to do is they were trying to take the best or the most valid of each of those stories and kind of like meld them into one universe. So they created this entire thing that was very similar to the Monitor, the Anti-Monitor, and all this kind of stuff that was happening in that TV series. And they really played with that idea and tried to make it as basic as possible and use different characters and all that. But the base story was the same. And what they did was they consolidated all of the major parts that everybody remembers of major pop culture in all of the series, and they stripped them down into a cohesive storyline that melded all the universes together that made sense. They did this way back in the 80s, like 87, I think, is when they started doing it.
Yeah, and it was from that version of the DC Universe, that consolidated one,
yeah,
that you saw the first death of Superman,
yes,
with Doomsday.
Yes.
You're right, it took all the various different storylines of Superman and Batman and all these various things that happened, and it kind of consolidated into one new canon. The other, yes, things were still valid, but this was the new canon.
Exactly.
And then they went and did it again.
Yes, they did. They did do a Crisis twice. Now, that being said, the reason why they did that is obviously because everything became too fucking convoluted. Now, let's fast forward to the last couple of years. You had the Justice League movie you're trying to have happen, and now you have this unfortunate issue, especially with a lot of contractual obligations. Henry Cavill's in, then he's out, then Batfleck is out because Henry Cavill's out, then you have all of this time they've been taking and building up on stuff. They've got Jason Momoa, they have Gal Gadot, they have...
Then you have the Twilight movie Batman.
They have what we would call sparkly Batman, or they have Robert Pattinson's Batman, which, by the way, on some of the more recent stuff that I've seen, I'm starting to get turned around on R-Pat's Batman, bro. This stuff's looking good. I'm not kidding. It's looking pretty good.
It's going to depend on...
The casting is fantastic so far.
Oh man, I'm digging on it. I know that there's a couple of guys.
I still want
a
short fat man as Penguin. Okay, I want a short fat man. Come on,
you want that guy that played the fucking dude man. Driving the van in Fanboys to play Penguin?
Oh, Dan Fogelman.
Yeah,
yeah.
I could see. Yeah. Oh, Dan Fogelberg. Yeah, Dan Fogelberg. He'd be good. He'd be good. And I mean nobody.
Dude, he's your hero, isn't he? He's got to be your cinematic hero.
Hell no.
Why Dan not? Fogelberg? Well, in the movie, especially in the movie Fanboys, his character in Fanboys has to be your
hero. Oh, he's fantastic. He's fantastic.
Because in his van, it's all Rush all the time.
Of course.
Sorry, it makes me think of you every time I watch it. I'm like,
all Rush all the time. Yeah. No, that's good. But that aside, I'm digging on the casting personally. I think there's a lot of interesting ways that things could go, especially being the fact that they're actually introducing a lot. They're introducing a full rogues gallery in this one, right? So the establishment of the universe is going to be there for the Batman universe. Now, here's the problem, though.
Hold on. They are also introducing a racially diverse Catwoman again. It's about damn time.
Well,
we've had to wait since Eartha Kitt. Come on.
I was going to say, yeah, exactly, because Halle Berry didn't fucking count.
Yeah, Halle Berry doesn't count.
Halle Berry does not count. We've been waiting for 60 years.
Let's be clear here. It is not because Halle Berry doesn't count as an actress. She's an amazing actress.
She is. It's just a bad movie.
It's because the movie was so awful.
Oh, yeah.
We don't want to remember that movie.
No. No. Absolutely. And Eartha Kitt was the shit as Catwoman. Everybody knows it. That is a fact. That is an infallible fact. But that being said... So the problem here that you have is this bunch of convolutions been happening with the DC universe, right? When it comes, or the DC EU, the film universe, and you have a lot of these stars that have had such a good time, and have been very, they've been great at their roles. Gal Gadot is fantastic. Momoa is fantastic. And then you have a lot of other people that are good at their offshoots. But you don't have a lot of people that have staying power. Like, I personally don't consider Joaquin Phoenix to have a lot of staying power as Joker. I think it's a great standalone Elseworlds story. It's very different, and it very well could be not necessarily established as a Joker character. I'm not quite sure. There's too much up in the air. But with what's happening with the fact that you have a lot of contractual obligations that have run out, and you have a lot of people that are kind of switching stuff, this leaves Warner Brothers and DC in a bit of a pickle. And the problem is that they want to be able to keep certain people, and they want to remove others. Because they have to. Otherwise, a lot of people are going to be paid a lot of money, and this is going to be a shit show. So, here's what they are looking at doing. Now, there was a comic book storyline that happened that included other universes that was similar to Crisis that was called the Flashpoint series. This was a series of comic books that came out in the late aughts, early... I want to say it came out in the late aughts and like the early 2010s, where, long story short, the Flash blacks out after some sort of failure. I can't quite remember. And he travels, but he uses the Speed Force to move so fast that he travels back in time. And out of reflex, he prevents the shooting of his mother from when he was a kid. This sets off an entire Elseworlds universe. A lot of shit happens.
By the way, I want to add, the CW Flash TV series actually dealt with this. There was a Flashpoint in that.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yes.
Was it good?
A flashpoint in that.
Was it good?
It was something else. His mother was shot, but his mother was shot by Reverse Flash. His mother was killed by Reverse Flash back in the
I believe in the comic books that's actually what happens. The Reverse Flash is shown to be responsible for his mother's death.
And also there was the amazing animated movie about Flashpoint, which was just completely and utterly brutal and brilliant.
Absolutely, 100%. That's a great and that's great because it started off an animated. That is actually the start off of the more recent animated universe with Jason O'Mara as Batman and the introduction of Damian Wayne and Batwoman's in it. Dude, So good. So good. Even just the Bat universe, but the Justice League universe around it. Jerry O'Connell's the voice of Superman. Rebecca Romijn is the voice of Lois Lane. So just overall, so good. Everything is so good. Very well thought out. And I actually have, I just got my hands on the Blu-ray of the finale of that series. So-called, as far as I know. This includes the death and return of Superman that's done in the last couple of films that they've done, and it's great. But I'm not talking about that right now. I'm talking about this Flashpoint thing. So one of the things that happens in Flashpoint is, because he prevents his mother's death, he sets off an entire universe, alternate universe. There's a few key points that happen in this. One of them is that Bruce, the kid, as a kid, is shot in the alley instead of his parents by Joe Chill. And it causes a rift, and Thomas Wayne becomes Batman in this storyline. And he
and
is...
Martha Wayne.
And Martha Wayne becomes the Joker. And it's so good. It's so good. Just the concept of that is insane. Aquaman and Wonder Woman are a former couple that go to war with each other.
Over Europe.
Over Europe. Basically. The world is falling apart. Yeah. And the Reverse Flash is all part of the whole thing to just get at the Flash. Like, that's what it is. That's his point.
Well, and if I remember correctly, Superman has been kept locked in a concrete vault away from sunlight.
He was discovered by the government. Yeah. He was discovered by the government. He did not live in hiding in Smallville, essentially, by a pair of parents in Kentucky. He wasn't raised up as a boy as an American. He wasn't Kansas. Yes, sorry, Kansas, not Kentucky. But yeah, he wasn't raised up by a rural family. He's discovered by the government and just tested on constantly, and it's all this crazy stuff goes down, right? Well, here's the thing. There's a possibility now that the Ezra Miller Flash may be taking on the possibility of using the Flashpoint storyline as essentially a MacGuffin. To piece together the new DC universe with whatever the hell they want to pick and choose.
Now, here's the thing. I think that was part that they had intended to use Flashpoint from the very beginning. Because why else would you cast Jeffrey Dean Morgan as Thomas Wayne for one scene for him to get shot?
Even
Martha Wayne. Martha Wayne is an actress from The Walking Dead as well.
Could you imagine?
I actually, when I saw that scene and I saw that Jeffrey Dean Morgan was Thomas Wayne, the first thing that went through my mind is, oh my God, I want them to do a Flashpoint.
Right. Jeffrey Dean Morgan, everybody lost their minds.
The comedian, because screw The Walking Dead. I don't care about The Walking Dead, but the freaking comedian as the Thomas Wayne Batman.
Oh yeah.
That is perfect.
Oh yeah.
He's just going to be so raw and visceral. And the way he helps Barry get his powers.
Yeah.
In the comic book, the torture that he inflicts upon Barry to get him his powers. I could so see Jeffrey Dean Morgan doing that and laughing the whole time while he's doing that. He's so good at that type of character. Believe me, when I saw him, that was my first thought is, oh my God, Papa Winchester's going to take care of some business because I'm a Supernatural fan too.
Cool.
But no, I mean, seeing that, I was like, yeah, I hope they do the Flashpoint and they bring him in for that. And I hope that when he signed up for it, his first thought was, I hope they're going to do Flashpoint at some point because that means I get to be Batman.
That would be amazing. I want to see that happen. So there's so many people want to see it. They've been speculating on that for years. They've been speculating on that for years. I would love to see it. However, I don't think it's going to happen.
Which
I think something else is going to happen.
Stupid.
Okay, I'm going to explain this to everybody.
Because if the other thing is going to happen, if what you think is, if I'm thinking right, what you're about to say,
this is speculation here. It's not mine. It's not mine. It's not my original idea. There's a couple of comic book websites that have come out and said it. What Culture has said it. There's a couple of people that have
nuts.
Said it.
Let's get nuts.
Don't. Yeah, let's get nuts. All right, so speaking of let's get nuts, the possibility here is apparently negotiations have been opened up with Michael Keaton.
No.
So what they're considering is that instead of the Thomas Wayne continuity, that it is possible that the Flash... Flash points his way into the Burtonverse.
Why?
Because dude, okay, I want to see Billy Dee Williams as Two-Face, goddammit. That's why.
I don't know that Billy Dee could even do it now. I mean, he had to have stuff to help him walk just to do his few scenes in Star Wars.
Oh, really? Because
he's at the point in age where he could barely walk, man. I mean, Billy Dee's he's an old dude at this point.
Oh,
yes, it would have been nice to see Billy Dee back in the day be able to get it. Now, if they bring in Donald Glover, who played the young Lando Calrissian in the Solo movie, that could be interesting, especially after that music video, the This Is America music video. I could see him pulling off a Two-Face.
Yeah.
That's something right there. But I could get behind that. But that ain't going to work if you're going to have Michael Keaton as old Bruce Wayne. Here's the problem I have with this, okay?
Okay.
Unpopular opinion. Which, by the way, let us make a moment here since we're talking so much about Batman. Let's do a rest in peace for Mr. Joel Schumacher, who admittedly gave us the worst Batman movie ever in Batman and Robin. But Batman Forever wasn't that bad when you consider the fact that the camp of the Adam West Batman for all those years.
Yeah.
Batman Forever wasn't that bad, and it's one of my favorite movies, so fuck off. But anyway,
no, it's totally cool. Like bat nipples. Even Schumacher said bat nipples was a bad call. Like even Schumacher said it. He understands. But
here's the thing. Here's the unpopular opinion.
You did have shark repellent in like the worst version of Batman. So
yes, the worst Batman movie ever had bat shark repellent. So there's that. And Fun Dip as the UN Council. but anyway, the thing is, and this is the unpopular opinion. I went and saw the original Burton Batman in theaters. I remember seeing it in the theaters. I had the Batwing toy. I had a Batman toy and a Joker toy from it. But the problem with the Burton Batman movies is you have a person who admittedly never read any comics, was never a fan of comics, directing a comic book movie, and as a result of which, there are so many things that just don't fit within the comic book aesthetic in the movie. And admittedly, at the time, we didn't know what a good comic book movie was. Because the only thing that we had for any kind of a comic book movie was the first Superman. Because every other subsequent Superman just got worse and worse. The second one was edited all to hell and destroyed. The third one, for some goddamn reason, had Richard Pryor as a sidekick for freaking Batman. So that's just what. And then the fourth one, don't even get me started.
Wait, Batman.
On the fourth one. Sorry, Superman. Richard Pryor's Superman sidekick. The fourth Superman was even worse. Let's burn some coffee trees and you know. Wait, was that the third one or the fourth one? I don't even know. They're so bad.
Well, there was the one where he fought the other, like, Superman-type character, but it wasn't Zod. It was, like, the shitty dude with the sun on his chest or whatever. Like,
yeah.
He looked like a shitty mashup between Superman and Flash Gordon, and, just, like, all...
Or Shazam or something.
It was awful. Yeah.
It was awful. So those movies were terrible. We got one good superhero movie with the original Superman. And even that one, okay, watching it originally, it was like, oh my God, a man is flying. That's great. And then he takes Lois flying, and there's some weird monologue-y thing that's half sung and half not. What the hell is that about? And again, the second and third one, the second one. Let me grab my symbol on my chest, and it turns into some giant plastic thing that covers,
Was that part of the Donner cut, or was that after he was fired?
That was after he was fired.
Yeah, that was bullshit.
So we didn't know what a good comic book movie was, because we only had one good one, and then three pieces of garbage trying to bank off of the goodwill of the one good one.
So, I was going to say, honestly, then, man, there are two good Superman films, and they end at the Donner cut. Well, I mean, Man of Steel wasn't bad. I will tell you that. I kind of liked Man of Steel in itself. I thought it was good.
I, I have a personal kind of love for that movie, but that's just because I like the distinction of the of which actor choices they make. The only one I don't like is Lois Lane, but that's a whole different story. Mm. She doesn't seem Amy Adams just isn't a strong enough character for me to portray Lois Lane.
Really?
But that's just me. Okay. Yeah, she just doesn't have the strength of will that I would expect from Lois Lane. Of course, neither did Kate Bosworth or Margot Kidder, in my opinion. But still, just not quite there. I love the fact that from Man of Steel, you have the fact that Superman. See, I keep getting him confused at this point. And I haven't even had that much to drink tonight. I love the fact that both Superman's dads, his real dad and his adopted dad, mm-hmm. are both Robin Hoods. That's kind of neat.
Oh, shit.
That's kind of
That's
cool
really funny.
Thing.
I never thought about that.
But anyway, the acting in that, I like the acting choices. I like that. But anyway, we get back to the Burton Batman. When the Burton Batman came out, we didn't know what a good superhero movie could be. So a half-assed superhero movie done by a director who just likes to make things dark and brooding. And admittedly, dark and brooding does work for Batman. So that at least helps. You're halfway there.
Yeah, you're halfway there.
The rest of it is just no.
Well, here's the thing, man. No. To be completely honest, I was actually quite shocked at I watched some some trivia on the Batman movies. The first two, Batman Returns specifically, because there was a lot of production stuff that happened in that second film. But I will tell you this. I'm actually pretty freaking impressed by Michael Keaton's version of Batman on its own. If you take the Tim Burton out and you put Michael Keaton into the bat suit and put him into a darker director's film, right? A director that would do justice to it at that era, at that point in time.
A more gritty and realistic director?
Yes. I think Michael Keaton as Batman would have been very, very, very well done. He had all he had everything that you needed. It's not like people were treating Michael Keaton like he was Tom Hanks, okay, at the time. And I'm talking Tom Hanks. I'm not talking like Forrest Gump Tom Hanks.
He was a comedic actor. He was Mr. Mom.
Right, I know, exactly. And that's half the reason why people are like, what? No, I remember hearing about that when I was a kid.
Yeah, no, my thing was, again, I think he did the best he could with what he was given for the situation.
Yeah.
I think it was a miscasting all around. I'm not discounting the effort that Michael Keaton put in and what he tried to make out of what it was there to be given. I just think that he wasn't necessarily the right person cast for the role. And then the rest of it, as far as the movie went, was just
Here's the thing, though. I want to throw this out there. We want to consider some things here.
Don't try to throw out the who else would you cast, because I don't know who would have been available to cast at that time.
No. No. I'm talking about, like, consider the possibility of, obviously, look at how old Michael Keaton is. He's not going to be 35-year-old Batman. He's not even going to be 50-year-old Batman. You know what version of Batman he's going to be?
Dark Knight Returns version.
He will be. Now, that in itself is half of the influence of what happened with Batfleck, right?
Now, see, yeah, Batfleck was kind of halfway to Dark Knight Returns.
Right.
Batman, especially with the metal suit. Now, see, here's the thing. At this point in his career, and this point in Michael Keaton's career, I totally can see him being cast as, even if he didn't have the previous Batman experience, mm-hmm. I could totally see him being cast as Dark Knight Returns Batman. I still think, interestingly enough, Jeffrey Dean Morgan would be an even better choice, although he's not as old. And I think that there are a couple other actors that could fulfill that role as well. Mm-hmm. But I can see Keaton playing that old, grizzled, beat-up veteran of you know, night after night on the streets, trying to deal with the criminal element and just having had enough of it at that point.
Right.
I can see him playing that now. And that works better for me. But his original casting, originally as Batman, it just never fully, I just never fully believed that this is the guy that's Batman. Moreover, this is not, you believe in the, that this is the guy that's Bruce Wayne.
He didn't look it well enough. I will tell you this. I think Keaton's version of Bruce Wayne nowadays is going to be a lot better than his version of Bruce Wayne from the 80s and 90s.
I agree. And that's the thing is, right now, I think if he playing the aging Batman as we've seen him in the various comics, yeah. I think Keaton is a good choice. But back in the day, playing the younger Batman, not as good a choice.
Right.
That's where I think that casting becomes an issue. For instance, going into Batman Forever, Val Kilmer, I think, made a decent Batman, but his Bruce Wayne was far too studious. He was far too intellectual.
Yeah. Yeah.
He wasn't playboy enough.
Yeah, he wasn't.
Yeah, not at all.
But well, I will tell you that Affleck's version of Batman actually worked because he was already older and he was already experienced. So his philanthropic side came out far more. Now, don't get me wrong, because Affleck totally would have been able to do the playboy thing too. If you cast Affleck at the same time you cast Christian Bale, Affleck in Christian Bale's, you know, if you put Affleck in the Christian Bale movies, he would have knocked that shit out of the park. Totally would.
Well, I mean, I don't think we have to talk about Clooney because that was just garbage. The whole of that performance. That performance is garbage. But that's where Christian Bale is able to pull off both the kind of arrogant, dipshitty, rich kid asshole.
Right, the cover. He was able to pull off the cover. I can agree with that.
Actually, not even before he had to do the cover, he was still the whiny Ivy League little shit that wanted to try to take revenge for his parents, but was too much of a pussy to take revenge for his parents. And then he was able to put on the cover of "Look at me, I'm the playboy. I'm swimming in water fountains in a hotel, restaurant." He could play that and then play moments of being serious and studious. I think Christian Bale was excellently cast for that series of movies.
Yes.
I think where he failed the most was when he was playing the older, more beaten up Bruce Wayne in Dark Knight Rises. I think that was, I wouldn't say he failed, but that was the least convincing of them.
Right.
But in the first two, it was very, very convincing that he was this younger version of the character that was just figuring this out, that was still had some of that that extreme snootiness and confidence of being a rich kid, but also some of the humility that he needed and trying to find the balance between it. I think it was a good combination, and he fit for that role. And you're right, Affleck could have possibly, I don't know if Affleck as an actor now could take his acting ability now in his younger self and do it, I think he could have pulled it off. Affleck, when he was younger trying to do acting, overacted the hell out of everything he did. And that's just the life of it. I mean, when Affleck was a younger guy doing stuff like freaking Armageddon and whatnot, which would have been about the age that he would have been playing the younger Batman, the Bale Batman, he was overacting all over the place. Luckily, if you're in a movie like Armageddon, directed by the people that direct movies like Armageddon, they kind of want you to chew the hell out of the scenery. So, you know,
That was kind of part of it.
And or when you're in your movie, when you're in a movie that's done by your best friend, you're able to chew the hell out of the scenery too, because he's not going to say anything to you because he's shorter than you and fatter than you and doesn't get as many chicks as you do. At least not then. Sorry, Kevin. It's true. I'm sure you would agree with it, man. But anyway, but that's the thing is, and by the way, the other reason I would love to see Batfleck come back, whatever this happens, especially if they're able to do the original Flashpoint with the Thomas Wayne thing. Mm-hmm. I know you're saying that that's not the direction you think it's going, but if they're able to do that, Thomas Wayne does send a letter with Flash after the timeline is reset to his son. And I would just love to see Ben Affleck as Batman get that letter, just because it's not a Ben Affleck movie if Ben Affleck doesn't get to cry. I'm just saying. And him crying as Batfleck, that's the ultimate. But no, I know that you had told me this information about Michael Keaton being being kind of contracted. You sent me the articles. I get the fan service of it. I mean, when the CW did their thing, for instance, they brought in, I don't know if you remember the Flash TV series from the mid-90s.
I didn't remember it, but I did see that part of it. I only saw the first three episodes. I missed the last two, and now I can't find them on CW. I'm hella pissed.
Well, no, there was a Flash TV series in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
There was a completely separate TV series.
Mm-hmm.
The guy that played the Flash in that is actually, in the CW series, he plays Barry's dad, and then he plays a Flash from an alternate universe.
Yes.
So when they did this Final Crisis thing in the CW series, they did bring in some older actors and some other actors that have been involved in the DC mythos before. Burt Ward was in the series.
Yes.
As was Kevin Conroy, who's been the voice of Batman, who should be the only person to do the voice of Batman. And he was playing Knight Returns style Batman.
Yes.
So,
sort of. He played Dark Knight Returns style, but way darker.
Well, I haven't had the opportunity to see it all yet.
Oh, man. But, okay, I won't spoil anything for you. Just go see it. It's so good.
I know what happens, but I just haven't had the time to sit there and watch all of it. But anyway, point being, I agree with the idea of trying to bring in some of the older people to try to garner some of that, fan service. I get that. But at the same time, I guess, knowing now that it might be a Dark Knight Returns one, or the speculation might be, that could be interesting. I could be okay with that. The thing is, this gives DC the ability, like you were saying, with the Flash's ability to travel back in time and reset timelines, this gives them the ability it has for years within the comics to kind of reset what happens within the universe. The whole idea of having multiverses.
Right.
Which, again, even Marvel has talked about dealing within multiverses. And they've planted the seeds in the movies, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. They planted the seeds for multiverse and stories that could happen within various multiverse. In fact, even in Endgame, there's at least one Splinter Universe that was created as a result of the time heist as the main story of Endgame. So there's at least one Splinter Universe where Loki gets away basically at the end of the Avengers events.
Yeah.
He gets away from the Avengers. So that's a Splinter Universe where things are different. And so, you know, it's also theorized that Captain America may have been living when he went back in time and stayed back in time. He may have been living in a completely Splinter Universe and then use the last of the pin particles to appear right there at the end of the movie as the old man. He may have lived in a completely different universe and had more adventures in a completely different universe if Chris Evans ever wants to put the shield back on.
Wow.
So the ability to create multiverses gives these various... It's kind of a useful tool in the sense that what they're saying is we don't necessarily have to have everything written in stone. We can have various versions of the tale. And in honesty, the neat thing about that is that gives everybody the opportunity to maybe, I wouldn't say everybody, it gives other people the opportunity to tell stories with familiar characters and maybe give different versions of the story, you know?
Yeah, I like it.
Maybe give versions that are more appealing to some, more appealing to others.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they make more Star Wars movies that take place during the time of episode 7, 8, and 9, but they're a whole different story because they take place in a whole different universe, in many ways that validates the Legends books, all these different books that have been written long ago. It validates them even more because that puts them back into canon. Well, not back into canon, but at least it gives them the same level of validity as 7, 8, and 9. Because at this point, 7, 8, and 9 is the story, and all this other crap is just legends that aren't real. They're just, you know, that they're not important. But you make a whole new continuity, suddenly that has the exact same weight as the 7, 8, and 9 continuity, because each one is a possible continuity, a possible future,
exactly,
a possible thing that could have happened.
I also like the capability of being able to open up the continuity of the universe to be what it needs to be. It allows, for Warner, it allows them to reconsolidate all of what they need to do in order to get the ideal universe they have together currently, plus be able to move on from that and be able to combine or move things around as they need to. It allows for the openness so that people have the freedom to create and insert what they need to in order to allow for, you know, whatever quality entertainment that they need, or at least come up with a decent level of entertainment without having to fully consider the continuity. I also like the fact they're able to rewrite the continuity. But I mean, consider this. If you were to do, are you familiar with the comic book continuity Three Jokers theory?
Yes.
Okay. So imagine this. There's the idea of the Three Jokers theory is that at the very end of the New 52 continuity series, boy, we're getting deep into the comic books here.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Let's not get into this one right now. We are running heavy on time.
We are running long. Yeah. Okay. So
this is something we can talk about at another point. We can put a pin in this and have a discussion about the Three Jokers, because I think that's an interesting conversation to have, and it's a lot longer than what we want to have right now.
For sure.
But we can have a continued conversation on the idea that having the ability for multiverse and having the ability to have different versions of continuity gives more freedom to the creators to explore different stories without having to stay within the rigid confines of this is what we expect.
Yeah, that's essentially what I was getting at. To be able to insert what you need to in order to have good entertainment. It could be fun. It could be outside of the general rules of movie making. Right?
Well, and when you make it the rule that each one of these stories can be their own standalone universe, they don't all have to conform to one set prescribed thing of storylines. You can make it acceptable and make it so that the fans can maybe enjoy it a little more instead of bitching and complaining that that's not my version of this.
Right. Exactly.
The only thing I don't want them to change, DC, please do not change. Keep Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman, please. Because she just needs to be Wonder Woman.
No, she's perfect at it.
Woman everywhere.
She's perfect at
it. She's perfect at everything. I'm just saying, a little bit of a celebrity crush there. Don't worry, my wife knows about that one, and she's perfectly okay with that one. She agrees that woman is beautiful. But anyway,
all right.
You know what's kind of neat about tonight?
What's up?
We started with saying that both of us kind of had a bad week, and we didn't know what we'd be able to talk about. We didn't know how it would be. We were just kind of down. And yet we were able to end up having a positive conversation about some fun stuff. I mean, just something I heard about, something you heard about, boom. We were able to have a rather lengthy conversation about, again, the fandoms, the things that we love, the geeky things that we're involved in. And I think it just goes to show that while the world right now is kind of a freaky place and things are still weird and rules are changing on a regular basis, and we still don't know which direction we're all completely heading. The thing is, even if we're having bad times, being able to find the humor, the fun, the things to be able to enjoy and talk about, you still need to have that capability.
Yeah.
Some days are going to be bad. Some weeks are going to be bad. Some years are going to be bad. 2020, hindsight will be everything on this year. The point being, we still need to be able to find the things that we can have some joy out of. And I think we're able to get some joy in our conversation tonight, despite our having a bad week.
Yeah.
So be that an inspiration to all of you, if you're listening. Having a bad week, find the thing to have joy in. Find the thing that you love that you can talk about with somebody that's your friend, and be able to have even just a sliver of sunlight in this dark world.
Absolutely, so, man. Very, very well put.
Thank you. Mike, where are people going to be listening to us at?
Well, if you're listening to us right now, you're probably listening to us at thezennialchronicles.com or zenchron.com, or maybe one of many other avenues. We're on Spotify. We're on TuneIn. We're on Apple. We are on Google. We are on Facebook. We're on YouTube. We are on everywhere that we can get into. To be completely honest, let's see. Man, I think
the only thing we don't have is Instagram still, because I'm still a dinosaur.
Yeah, but you can go ahead and follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N. TheZennialChronicles.com does have a shorthand version of the website. Zenchron.com is where you can see the podcast there. And like I mentioned with YouTube before, you can head to our YouTube page. Go ahead, if you're listening on YouTube, like the video. Go ahead and comment us, too. Comment on us. We do respond to comments, and we will, if there's any questions or anything that somebody wants to bring up from a previous podcast that you're listening, we'll bring it up on air. We'll actually talk about it. We'll see if we might be able to answer on air, or we might even comment back as well. And, I think that... Oh, one more thing. If you are on our YouTube page, please hit the subscribe button and make sure you hit that bell icon so you get alerted when we have a new podcast out.
Click the bell.
Click the bell.
All right, everybody, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you learned a little bit more about Star Wars and DC Comics movies. If you want to learn more, listen to the old stuff that we've done and keep listening, because I guarantee we'll be talking about it again. Thank y'all, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.